Great, thank you, Kendrick. Thank you for having me here. Is this like serious? Like people use this for a talk? This is great. But which side am I supposed to use?
Speaker's choice.
Okay, this is better. Oh, it depends. Okay. Hi, I'm Jia. Sorry, go ahead.
If we ask too many questions, the flat side is good. No,
so I think that's why there's no one sitting on the first row, I guess. Hi, I'm Jia, and I'm from BCCP. I just moved from Princeton, so it takes me, this is the first time I give talk as a Berkeley person, so yes. And I'm not sure if this is the correct picture, like I was asking Kendrick. This doesn't look like what I saw when I walked over, so I'm not sure what happened, but this is the first image show up on Google. So I'm trying to be more connected to the place here. So also, my newborn daughter, 3 months old, Clementine, is there. She will be gone soon so I can focus giving talk. But yeah, yeah, we just had a baby, and I'm like still towards the end of my maternity leave. So like my brain might be a bit slow, but pardon me. Okay, she's gone now. Now I can focus. So I'll talk about neutrinos with cosmology today. So I was told some people might not know the background of neutrino with cosmology very well, so I'll go through the background really quick. So from oscillation experiments, we now know that neutrinos must have mass. So this is when they are changing their flavor. So here are the flavor eigenstates. In order for them to oscillate between these three eigenstates, they have to have three different mass eigenstates, neutrino 1, 2, 3. So we know they have to be all different. Therefore, maybe one of them is zero. That means the other two can't be zero. Therefore, the total mass of neutrinos must be non-zero. So with that in mind, this is what we now know from particle experiment, from oscillation experiments. So we now know two different neutrino mass differences. One is from atmospheric oscillation. We know this number, mass squared difference. And then this is another number we know from solar neutrino. One of them is from Snow Lab. So the problem is we don't know the ranking because we only know the absolute difference. We don't know the ranking. So we can rank the three neutrino masses in these two ways. The normal hierarchy, you have two small masses, one big mass. And the inverted hierarchy, one small mass and two big masses. So we also have this issue of we don't really know what is this number, the lightest neutrino mass. But if we just assume it to be zero, we can already get some interesting information. Actually, this is really heavy. I'm gonna give up for a bit. So we have two information is if we have normal hierarchy, we have a minimum mass of 0.06 eV. And if we have inverted hierarchy, we have 0.1 eV. That is the minimum mass you will have. Please keep in mind, these two numbers will be very important throughout this talk. So why do we care about neutrino mass? First, we have standard model of particle physics, and all these quarks and fermions and the other bosons. We don't know the neutrino mass, so it's still pretty embarrassing to have like a question mark on your standard model of particle physics. So simply want to fill in this empty information. But then beyond that, if we look at all the fermions, if we put their mass on a scale look like that, the other fermions, they lie around that region. So those are the six quarks, and then tau, muon, and the electron. However, if we put neutrinos on this chart, they lie on this region. So simply by looking at this chart, you already feel uncomfortable. I hope you're uncomfortable. So there is a big gap in between them. There's six order of magnitude gap between them. So this is very strange. To understand why the masses of neutrino are so much smaller than other baryons can give us a lot of hint to particle physics, including the mass generation mechanism. Why are they so small? And also one of the very attractive mass generation mechanism. It's called the seesaw mechanism, as you can see in this animation from Wikipedia. That if you have a really heavy right-handed neutrino, you can potentially explain the smallness of this left-handed neutrino we see. And this right-handed neutrino, potentially, they could explain dark matter. And also, our neutrino mass, these parameters related to other neutrino parameters, for example, their CP violation phase, and that could even potentially explain what we observe today of the matter and antimatter asymmetry. So many interesting things to explore if we know the neutrino mass. So that is the motivation. Let's see what do we have for current constraints. So after all, neutrinos are particles, and the particle experiments are working really hard to constrain the neutrino mass. The typical method people use is the tritium beta decay method. Here you have a tritium particle. Here you have two neutrons, one proton inside. And one of the neutrons goes through beta decay, and now you have three N product and helium-3 product, helium-3 particle, and then antineutrino and the electron. So what people do is to look at the electron spectrum after this decay. So if you have zero, so this is the number counts of electrons as a function of energy. And this is what you expect, the blue curve is what you expect if the neutrino mass are zero. And then the red curve is when the neutrino mass are larger than zero. So the difference between them is taken away by the neutrino rest mass. So there are already experiments on trying to measure this endpoint. So from current constraint, from particle experiment, again, I want to remind you the two minimum mass. From particle experiment, Katrin experiment just updated their constraint last month. It used to be 2 eV from the Trosik experiment. Now it's from Katrin. Now we have upper limit of 1.1 eV. So we think 4 or 5 years from now, Katrin projection is about 0.2 eV. So comparing this number to the minimum mass, 0.06 eV, like, if we're very unlucky, the neutrino mass being 0.06 eV, we won't see anything from Katrin in the next 5 years. So I'm talking about cosmology in my talk, and I want to also give you cosmological constraint right now. So using CMB and CMB lensing and the BAO from Planck last year, they got a constraint of 0.12 eV. So comparing this number to the particle experiment, we're already one order of magnitude better in constraining power. But the cosmology can do better than this in the next decade. If you combine experiments like LSST here and DESI here, CMB S4 forecast is 0.03 eV. Again, this forecast is almost an order of magnitude better than Katrin. So this is very promising. Seems like we might pin down the neutrino mass in the next decade, because if you compare this number, it is lower than the smallest minimum mass of neutrino mass sum. Okay, this is very exciting. Do you have a?
Yeah, so for the Katrin band, so should I interpret this as like the lightest mass eigenstate, or should I interpret it as like some combination?
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah, this is a really effective mass of electron neutrino, so it's still different than this. This is the sum of them, so this is weighted by their mass ratio, we think, that goes into the electron mass. But then I guess you can translate that. So if you translate this to the neutrino mass sum, this should be somewhat worse. Yeah. So it's not exactly lightest neutrino. So it's a comment. There's a.
What prospects are of this other tritium endpoint experiment, Ptolemy?
Ptolemy is an experiment in Princeton that are trying to, instead of detecting the the endpoint of beta decay, they're trying to detect like the beyond endpoint, there's some bump because of absorption of cosmic neutrino. I don't think it's happening anytime soon. From my understanding, they're still at very early stage of R&D. Yeah, but that's a very new idea that actually will detect cosmic neutrino. And because this is not cosmic neutrino, yeah.
Chris Tolley was here in September. I think he was saying they were hoping to get their hope for mass resolution was good, better than, you know, good enough to detect even the mass.
I see. Okay. Yeah, you should trust him more than me, of course. Okay. So why is cosmology doing so well? I want to go through quickly the overview of cosmic neutrinos. So this is the effect of cosmic neutrino. They're very similar to the cosmic microwave background. We also have cosmic neutrino background. But instead of 380,000 years, wait, is it 38,000 or 380? Now I'm confused. Yes, because in Chinese, the translation is like off by 10, so I'm always confused. Just many number of years after the Big Bang, that was the CMB. That's when the photon decoupled from the large the electron soup. Exact same thing happened for a cosmic neutrino, but 1 second after the Big Bang, that is when neutrinos decouple from the rest of the hot soup. And at late time, the major effect of neutrinos is the suppression of growth. So here you're looking at dark matter and baryons. If you see a big gravitational potential, everything here, they just collapse, fall into the gravitational potential because they're pretty cold. However, neutrinos there, they have really large initial velocity. And then when they see a gravitational potential, they just fly through them. So as matter, they don't really cluster as all other matter in our universe. And this is the signature we're trying to measure in cosmology to constrain the neutrino mass. So I want to show you a simulated picture of what we're expecting. So this is an exaggerated version of what the effect I want to talk about. So this is the standard model of cosmology. There's a lot of dark energy, and some dark matter have very little neutrino mass in them. And if you just boost neutrino mass, this is what you see. So on large scale, you see these filaments. You still see very similar structure. But then on small scale, because of the suppression of structure, you see the smooth out of small scale structures by neutrinos. And it is exactly this smoothing out we're trying to measure in cosmology. So typically, the way we measure suppression is this. So I'm showing you a SDSS galaxy distribution just to give you a visual idea. And then you want to measure the two-point correlation function. In another word, you measure the clustering. You put down rulers, different direction, different size, and you measure how likely you're going to find the galaxies at each end of your ruler. And then you do this many times, and you would get matter power spectrum. Here is the scale, cosmic scale, and this is smaller scale for galaxy and the clusters. So on large scale, you don't see much difference in your clustering of matter. But on small scale, this is what neutrino does. So when you have different neutrino mass, this is 0 eV, 0.5 eV, 1 eV. I made neutrino mass very big so you can see the effect better by eye. You see a suppression on this small scale. And this is exactly what I showed you earlier, that on small scale, the structures are smoothed out because of neutrinos. And then we like to show a suppression plot, which is just the ratio of this color curve with respect to the black curve. So this is the suppression we are trying to find in matter power spectrum due to neutrinos. And then the larger neutrino mass, the larger suppression it is. Okay. So let's Now take a closer look at the current model for neutrino suppression. So this is the, I only show you the suppression plot. This is a function of scale again. And on large scale, I'm showing you different models. So this is linear theory, this is nonlinear theory, and this is another nonlinear theory. On large scale, they're very similar. It's somewhat easy, it's only linear theory can capture everything. But on small scale, you can see that they're very different. We know nonlinear linear theory is wrong here, but then this two halo model, halo fit, they are not really working well. They disagree more than the difference between them and the linear theory.
Is this the galaxy power spectrum?
No, this is the matter power spectrum, yeah.
So I have a problem. So would our results depend on how omega nu you have in the massive dimensions? I say the how much mass is finally residing the neutrino.
Sorry, what?
So just say like all these results depending on the mass of neutrinos, but let's say
yeah.
How much the neutrino mass would account for the total background?
So from our current upper limit point, one EV neutrino state will count for less than 1%.
So that means the omega nu is something related to the mass of the neutrinos, or?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So meaning you vary the mass of the neutrino, you also vary the mass fraction. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
The number density is known.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. So the mass will be. Related to the neutrino omega nu as well. That's right. So this is an issue, and we really need to have better understanding of this nonlinear scales because, as you can tell, that neutrino has a larger suppression on small scale.
So the Hill effect models are still calibrated against antibodies.
That's right.
So what exactly is the source of this disagreement? That they're calibrated in some range, and then they just disagree at smaller scales, or is it?
Yeah, so that depends on the way they calibrate, because Takahashi, they really don't have neutrinos in their simulation, so they're just using some correction to put neutrinos in. And then this model, Simeon Bird, he actually ran simulation with neutrino in, and then calibrated their model against those, but then they only had like 3 neutrino mass, and then they like, do interpolation to other mass.
So massless neutrinos, the agreement is much better.
Yes. For halo fit without neutrino,
yeah.
I think it's still like 10%. Yeah. And also, you can argue this baryonic effect is also important here, and then like there's a lot of complication in that region. But then for neutrinos, it's particularly bad. Because here you need a linear model, it's already well understood. For mildly nonlinear Rugin, we can use perturbation theory. And then like I said, for the really nonlinear Rugin, you really need simulation to capture this range. And then the discrepancy between them is really because of the limit in simulation. They don't run enough simulation, they don't have a large enough box or high resolution. The number of neutrino masses they put into their simulation is all causing this issue. Okay, so in order to understand the nonlinear Rugin and then the neutrino effect in those Rugin, we ran a large grid of neutrino simulations. We call it cosmological massive neutrino simulation, massive NEWS for short. So this is a quick overview of the simulation. Is we sample 3 parameters, neutrino mass, and omega m, and the AS, primordial clustering amplitude, and the matter density. So this is the 3D grid of the parameter space, and there are 100 points on this grid. So each one of this 100 point is embodied simulation. So I also want to advertise a lot of the data is public. You can download there. There are about 20 terabytes of data, but there are lensing maps, halo catalog, what else? Snapshots, merger tree. So welcome to download, play with them, or if you have questions, you can ask me. So with this set of simulation, we can do a lot of science. But then before we move on to some science result, I want to just go back to this plot. We saw there are some discrepancy between the two halo fit models. So I was just curious which one of them is correct. So I overplotted my simulation. So the truth lies somewhere in between them. Yes. So the simulation, the particle, you mean particle number density? So we have, yes. So so one feature of the simulation is the fast neutrino code we use from Simeon Bird and Yasir Alihamun. They developed. Yes. So neutrino particles are put not as particles because it's too expensive, as Neil probably can tell you. And then, the way we do is we put neutrinos as a linear component, and then so they're evolved as just analytically, but then they are sourced by the nonlinear clustering of your matter field. So there's this benefit of it's very cheap. You almost have no overhead on to your computational memory and the time. And also it's pretty accurate. We compare to particle neutrino simulation, so it's pretty good. And the box size 500 megaparsec and the mass resolution about 10 to the 10 solar mass. Yep. So this was like one of the largest grid of cosmological models with neutrino mass until Quixote simulation from CCA came out like last month. They have, I don't know, 200,000 simulation or something. Yeah. So when you have money. Yes.
So Wayne Lee's group also has this very large particle-based simulation with neutrinos. Do you know how the results compare?
Sorry, which group?
Wayne Lee Pan's group.
My understanding, they have one giant neutrino simulation.
Right.
Yes.
But they can still measure the matter power spectrum.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I don't remember their result. I think they're interested in something else, like they're interested in also the neutrino component.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the neutrino clustering, which is not measurable in any foreseeable future, unless there's some other reason to.
My point is they can also measure the matter power spectrum.
I see. Yeah, I'm not sure
whether they've done that or whether you've done a comparison.
I haven't compared with theirs. I don't. Their simulation is not public. Yeah. Okay. So, yes. Now we have matter power spectrum. And we can, using the technique called emulator, to go to very high precision, like 1% accuracy, that can be done. But I want to focus on something else now that's go beyond the matter power spectrum that I showed you, that everyone loves to measure. I want to mention about non-Gaussian information in your simulation. So I want to demonstrate next using the familiar millennial simulation to many of you to show you what I'm talking about. So this is a millennial simulation. So this is the high density regions, the low density regions. And next, I want you to find which one of them is the millennial simulation. So here I'm showing you two images. One of them is a millennial simulation, but they are smoothed on a very large scale, 50 megaparsec. All the information below 50 megaparsec is erased now. Another image is a Gaussian random field. So please tell me which one you think is from millennial simulation from here. And yes, you shouldn't be able to tell because on this scale, like everything is well captured by the power spectrum. So yeah, they have exact the same power spectrum throughout. Okay, so now I'm changing the resolution. I erase only things below 20 megaparsec. So you can see the resolution gets higher. And then you should be able to see more structure. Is there any feeling which one is millennial simulation or the real universe? This one? This one? Everyone agrees? We can move on to the next one. So this is 2.5 megaparsec, and all of you were wrong. So, well, if you can tell, this is just a guess. So do you still think this is the one millennial simulation? Anyway, they still have the same power spectrum, and you can see the structure is showing up more as I go down to smaller scales. Yeah, but this is when we go down to 1 megaparsec, and this is the millennial simulation, and this is just a Gaussian random field, and they have exactly the same power spectrum. So I hope now you're convinced that using the matter power spectrum, we're missing a lot of information, especially on the small scales. Yeah? Okay, so the next question is, how do we extract this information out? And then the method I will talk about is using non-Gaussian statistics. So the science results I'm presenting are done mostly by many students. Most of them are at Princeton, some graduate student and the undergrad student. And then next to their head, they are the projects they're leading. So I'm not gonna talk about all of them, but if you're interested in any particular one of them, you can talk to me afterwards. So I will focus on bispectrum and peak counts. Okay, so our next task is to extract this information that is lost in matter power spectrum, but you can even tell apart by your eyes. However, we don't have that much energy to go through all the picture by eye. We want to use some method. So we already talked about two-point correlation function, this very popular method. So it is complete only for Gaussian information, and we know it's not enough. So the natural thing to move on is simply counting 1, 2, 3. So the next one is 3-point correlation function. For 3-point correlation function, or in Fourier space, we call it bispectrum. It is sensitive to non-Gaussian information, and it is measuring instead of ruler size, you're measuring clustering as a function of triangle shapes and size. And if you put down different size and the shape of triangles everywhere and measure them, you will get something like bispectrum. But here I'm using weak lensing bispectrum, so it's a projective field already, not in a 3D field. I want to show you just some illustration of what you would see. Here are two bispectrum shapes. This is equilateral bispectrum. This is squeeze limit. So if we focus on this panel, this is the multipole scales, and this is the bispectrum. So you're seeing two redshift. So redshift 1, and this is the source redshift 2. So you already see there's some evolution as a function of redshift. And the solid line is massless, and the dashed line is massive neutrino. So there's some difference between neutrino masses already. And then this is the suppression due to neutrino mass. And then here you're looking at squeeze limit. Again, you see evolution, and then you see the difference between different neutrino masses. And it is this signature we're trying to measure to constrain cosmology.
So for comparison?
Yeah.
So how strong is the effect on the power spectrum on similar scales? Just to orient.
Oh, so a power spectrum is like half of this. This is larger than power spectrum. Power spectrum, I think with a similar mass, is less than like a few percent. However, power spectrum has a smaller error bar. Bispectrum has much larger error bar. I didn't plot error bar here because I just want to illustrate. Bispectrum has larger error bar, but there are so many triangle shapes. So combined together, they are really constraining as well. Yeah, but then the total suppression level is larger. Yeah.
So is there some simple explanation for the order of magnitude of the effect, and similar to this 8F mu that we all know for the power spectrum?
I see.
Just curious, it's not just like.
Yeah. No, not, maybe I need to think about it, yeah. Okay, so So we want to, what we want to do next is to translate this suppression to cosmology. So this is a work done by Will Colton, and well, Matt was on the paper as well. And here you are looking at, I'm just chopping out one plane so you can see it more clearly. So this is neutrino mass, and this is matter density. So I'm showing you a forecast for LSSD using 5 tomographic redshift bands and the galaxy density expected from LSSD about 40 galaxies per arc minute squared. So this is the power spectrum constraint, the black curve to sigma constraint, and then this is the bispectrum constraint. So one thing you notice that bispectrum itself is not more constrained, it's like comparable strengths as the power spectrum, but then you can see that they're a little bit misaligned. So if you join them together, you can have this joint constraint, which is better than the power spectrum. So we can improve the constraint on neutrino mass by 30% using just the combination of bispectrum, which is comes for free, you can think of that way, other than maybe grad student time. But the data is there, and this is all just met by using a new statistic, you can get this out. Okay? So this is very encouraging that simply change your or improve your analysis method, you can get this extra constraining power. So we want to be greedier and then move on, say, should we do 4-point correlation function? Yes, there's a question. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because so if you look at this, you mean this number?
Oh, the current Planck
rule is 0.12. That's right. So I'm only showing you for LSSD on its own, but then the Planck constraint is combining multiple probes. So if you add CMB prior, it will be much better. Yeah. Yeah, there's no. Yeah, if you include CMB, it will be much better. But we haven't added other probes yet. We're only looking at the only from weak lensing. It's on, yeah, that's why it's weak.
So for the combined, red curve.
Yeah.
Why is the direction,
more aligned with, or?
Yeah, why is it not sort of, halfway between, the black and blue directions?
Yes, this, we really need to look at the 3D contour. So this is after you project, and there are two, I didn't show all the planes, but then, yeah. So if you look at all other planes, if you have a 3D vision, you can think of why it's like this.
I do have 3D vision.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, if I can plot this out. Yeah. So when we marginalize, it's not always intuitive if I only see this.
There's actually 4 parameters.
Sorry? There are 3 parameters.
AS.
AS, omega.
Hubble constant.
Hubble constant is not. It's a neutrino mass, AS, and omega m. I can show you all the panels next after the talk. Okay, should we do 4-point correlation function next? Yeah, shake head. Why we shouldn't do it? Yeah, so we shouldn't do 4-point because there are too many of them. Like, it's become impossible to model them. So we just can't do this because after 4-point, then we 5-point and 6-point, just there are an unlimited number of points, and it gets harder and harder. It's really hard to model, especially the covariance, and then also just model how they should look like. Then we think maybe the best thing to do is use some summary statistic, some smart way to contain a lot of information, but in a few numbers. The typical way people like to do is weak lensing peak counts. Quickly introduce to you what is weak lensing peak counts. So this is a weak lensing convergence map. Here are the high density regions along the line of sight, and then here are the low density regions. And the peaks are simply the pixels that has value that are higher than their surrounding pixel values. And you take out all this peaks in your lensing map and make a histogram of it, that gives you a lot of information. So this is some physical intuition for you to think why peak counts are so constraining. So there will work that ray trace through, just go back in your simulation and check what are the structures that causing these peaks. So those structures are clusters, really massive halos. So they are the ones that are preferentially giving you a lot of nonlinear information. And that is why peak counts intuitively can give you a lot of non-Gaussian information. So again, if you remember this picture I showed you, on large scale, they're very similar, but it's on the really small scales like this that neutrino masses are causing difference. So here is application on data. This is the CFHE lens data, came out 2013. This is a mass map from CFHE lens. So I did analysis of peak counts on CFHE lens data. So here you're looking at actual peak counts from CFHE lens. So this is kappa, the convergence or the projected density. And the y-axis is just the number of peaks in each bin. So the green points are the counts in each bin. And the dash curve is the Gaussian random field case that you would create, assuming they have the same power spectrum. So this is what you expect. This is what you see if you do a ratio plot. It's easier to see here that there is indeed deviation from Gaussian random field in the peak counts. So they don't look very different here because the noise, shot noise, is still pretty high in that generation of data, but it will improve much better in the next generation. So if we translate this to cosmology, I'm showing you constraint from peak counts from different survey. This is from CFHE lens that I showed you, the first generation of weak lensing data. Here, the green curve is from power spectrum, and peak counts is this red or purple curve. And then when you combine them, it's the black curve. This is for omega m and sigma 8. So you can see that peak counts is performing slightly better than the power spectrum, slightly offset. And then when you combine them, you have this black curve that's better than the power spectrum alone. And people also did analysis using DES, I think this science verification data. So they also find that using peak counts, you get very similar constraint as the power spectrum. And the same story with KISS 450 data recently. This is without neutrino mass because the data is not good enough to constrain neutrino mass, but hopefully in the next generation data, we can constrain more parameters. Yes?
Looks like when you combine the power spectrum and peaks, the constraints are slightly worse than if you just use the peaks.
Yeah, I think it's because there's some offset, potentially some systematic that only impact them differently. And then when you combine them, you get something in between. This is what we got. Yeah. And then we're not sure what is the systematic that's causing the difference between them. And also, so in theoretical work, like people expect peak counts to give you better constraint, but in reality, because the data is not very good, so you end up getting just similar constraints right now. Okay. So like I said, we are not yet able to constrain neutrino mass with peak counts, but we did forecast for LSSD. So again, I'm comparing, showing you the same contour plot for omega m and the neutrino mass. This is the power spectrum, and this is the peak counts. So if you remember the bispectrum constraint I showed you, bispectrum was having very similar constraining power as peak power spectrum, but then here peak counts on its own is already doing better than the power spectrum. And because it's already doing so well, when you combine them, you get back pretty much very similar contour as peak counts. So you can improve the neutrino mass constraint by combining them by 40%. So this is what we found. And now we're trying to push down Gaussian statistic to LSSD to hopefully improve the constraint on neutrino mass than on using power spectrum alone. OK, so I talked about few ideas to help us constrain neutrino mass in the next decade. And you might want to ask, can we really pin down neutrino mass in the next decade? So let's see what's going to happen next 10 years. There's LSSD that is happening soon. And then Euclid will be flying soon. And then WFIRST maybe flying. That are just galaxy surveys. And then CMB series, people here are very familiar with, Simons Observatory and CMB S4. So many exciting new experiments are coming online. And this is a forecast combining all these experiments. So this is neutrino mass, and then this is dark energy. If you only use CMB S4, this is what you expect. And if you only use LSSD, if it's lensing, this is what you expect, and this is clustering. And then this is combination of lensing and clustering, the green curve. And only if you combine both CMB and LSSD, you can get some meaningful constraint on neutrino mass. And this is slightly worse, well, comparable to what you saw from Planck, because here you open up a dark energy parameter as well. The Planck one I quote is dark energy minus one. So the key point from this plot is that no experiment can do it alone. So in the next decade, I think we really need to think of how to combine all the experiment together to give you neutrino mass constraint. So this is a timeline of how things are gonna happen. LSSC and Euclid are coming online very soon, and the Simons Observatory as well. And then later on, you're going to have WFIRST and CMB S4. They are having higher resolution than the previous experiment. So we're actually going to have data very soon, and people are trying really hard to work out the modeling. But in order to do that, we are facing four major problems. One is the nonlinear modeling that I mentioned, like how do you run simulations that are big and high resolution enough to capture all this neutrino effect that you're interested in? The simulation part. So currently, the state of art is still running numerical simulations, but people are also trying to think if there's fast way to run simulation, like the FastPM developed at Berkeley, or potentially machine learning, like people develop at CCA, are things you can think of. I'm not sure how people feel about that, but that's some problem we need to solve. And then also the next thing people are worrying about are the survey systematics. For example, the major issue with LSSD is photo Z, and also shape measurement. You are trying to use pixelated images like this and then infer whatever galaxy shape was before. And then after that, you also need to worry about astrophysical processes. So this is something I am currently interested in, because before I was always run numerical simulation with dark matter only. But we know on small scale that we're interested in baryons are playing a role as well. So this is showing you what I'm talking about. This is dark matter distribution. And this is baryonic. This is a hydro simulation from Illustris. So all these nice thin filaments are now blown up and fluffier because of baryons. And if you remember the neutrino image I showed you, the small scale things are smoothed out or kind of like things get kicked out, which can be mimicked by baryonic effect. So understanding baryonic effect is very important to go forward. And one thing we also worry is how do we actually model baryonic effect? Because dark matter simulation is already pretty hard to run, and the hydrodynamic simulation is very expensive. we really don't have that much computing power to model the whole grid of both cosmological parameters and the baryonic parameters. So current thoughts are you can learn from hydro simulations and then implement those recipes on your dark matter simulation. And also you can constrain all this recipe from external observations like X-ray, TSZ, and KSZ. So I want to show very quickly that non-Gaussian statistics might be able to help with baryonic effect. So this is a paper we just put out last month with Will Colton. Here we're looking at peak counts and the minima. This is something new we looked at. Is simply flip your map or the local minima in your map and how they constrain for cosmological parameters. So I only want to point out the red contour. So the green contour is what I showed you earlier from just the dark matter simulation. And then the red contours are if you change your observable by hydro simulation, AKA including baryonic effect, and still using your dark matter model to predict the cosmology. So for peak counts, that we actually see quite large bias due to baryons. For minima counts, this is what we see. You don't see a very large bias from minima. So intuitively, peak counts, they are looking at really high dense regions in our universe where you expect baryons would have larger impact. And the minima counts here I'm showing you is looking at more like a void region in our universe, and the baryons may have different impact on them. Go ahead.
What hydro simulation?
We're using Bahamas simulation. So they are large box, and then they have like different level of.
What does it mean to marginalize over baryons?
Yes, so this is the contour I haven't talked yet. So the red curve is you have no baryon in your model, but they're including your observation. And then the blue contour is you have baryons in both your model and your observation. And then we build a model for baryons, and then you include baryon parameter together with your cosmological parameter.
You have an analytic model for the effect of baryons.
That's right. Yeah, that's a simplified model.
That seems to work really well because it removes the bias and it also doesn't seem to affect the error.
So this is really a naive result we got because we assume all baryon effects are captured by one number, a baryon. That's correlated to how much gas you kick out of your halos. And yes, so if we use very simplified model, we see that if you marginalize over baryon, seems like you can get rid of this bias.
That's kind of impressive, right? Because your model presumably doesn't know anything about the simulations. It's an analytic model that has nothing to do with Bahamas, right?
And no, it's from we derive from Bahamas. Yes, we have a model. We measure. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So. That's right. Yeah, we checked another set of hydro sims. So the issue is, there aren't a lot of hydro sims that we can use to make model because it's just so expensive, and we need variation in hydro sim hydro parameter to build this model, and then there's simply not a lot of hydrosim that has this. So this is really initial step to test just some idea that you can actually include hydro parameters in your cosmological analysis. But you really need to use different hydrosims to calibrate this, like so we can understand if this is subgrid model dependent. But this gives some initial idea that maybe using different techniques, some of them are not very sensitive to baryonic effect, maybe minima counts. And then combining them, you can constrain the hydro parameters and the cosmological parameters together, hopefully. Yeah, so now we're facing this issue that we've been always running dark matter simulations, and how do we implement baryons in our simulation? So one way people like to do is to paint. So you have your dark matter simulation, you find halos in your simulation, and then you put gas profiles onto the halos you find in your simulation. And then assume that is what you observe with in a universe that has baryons. But then to figure out whether this is really capturing all this baryonic effect, we start to look into the impact of baryons on different cosmic structures. So this is a work, really preliminary result by a student, Zach Lee at Princeton. So we're looking at suppression of power spectrum due to baryons. So the black curve is the suppression due to all baryons. So you can see that it almost can mimic neutrino mass because neutrino mass is also suppressing power spectrum. And then this is using illustrious TNG. And then we first separate the whole box into different cosmic structures, including cluster, filaments, walls, and voids. And then we progressively replace all the particles by each structure. So the dark matter box, we replace first the clusters only, and then we replace only the filaments, and then replace the wall, et cetera. And then here we replace three components, cluster, filament, and wall together, and the cluster and the filaments. So what we see is, if we only replace clusters, so this is the impact of baryon purely due to cluster, this is what we see. And then this is impact of baryons on filaments. So we see that suppression due to filaments, if baryons in filaments, is pretty large. And then if you just replace a cluster and filament together, you can pretty much get out all the effect. However, one problem we have here is the definition of cluster and filament. Because after all, filaments is really just made out of halos of various mass. If you go down to the different halo mass towards smaller and smaller halo mass, you're getting like all the matter in the universe. So we are still tuning this, but we're hoping to figure out at what mass range you need to go to capture all the baryonic effect and whether the idea of painting will really work. Okay? So finally, so after the third point, I spent quite some time talking about this, finally is the joint analysis people need to do to capture neutrino effect, because everything is overlapping in sky, and then joint constraints from different probes at different redshift is really necessary. And also we need to think about joint simulations. So I hope I can talk with people today, sometimes about the idea of joint simulations between especially CMB community and the galaxy community. How do you combine your different simulation method but trace through the same large scale structure? And I think that's very important. Next. So can we pin down neutrino mass in the next decade with all this mess that I talked about? So I think it won't be easy, but it will be worth it. And here is my summary. So the physics, massive neutrino, they have high potential lead to another breakthrough in the next decade. However, to reach that, we really need accurate modeling of the nonlinear scale. And then finally, we need to figure out how to combine different strategy and the probes and the data to reach discovery. And thank you for your attention. Yes, Will?
So there's been a recent paper, Karagiannis, name I just butchered. They looked at 3D clustering measures and said or proposed that the bispectrum is like five times as good as the power spectrum for measuring neutrino mass.
Yeah.
But for the weak lensing, you've only got a 30 to 40%
yeah.
improvement. What's, is there a simple physical way to understand the difference?
Yes, because by spectrum, you have the 3D information and then 2D, the weak lensing is you have projection, so you lose some information due to the projection.
And you lose more in the bispectrum than the power spectrum?
Actually, I'm not sure how, I know the paper you're talking about is from Han et al. Recently. Yeah. So, yeah, sounds like I was really surprised they can get so much high constraining power from that as well. And then I think they only have even two halo turns, they don't even have one halo turn, because they are looking at halo bispectrum.
They certainly only went to K of about 0.1
mm-hmm.
over the linear growth rates.
Yeah. So, and also they have many, many cosmology parameters. So other type of degeneracy breaking may be happening because I only look at three.
But this factor of five, it was used by quite a few of the papers that were proposing next generation surveys in the decadal.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So what you're saying, Matt?
Like shape noise, like, you know, using shapes.
So you mean?
Three times, you know, three factors of shape noise instead of two factors.
Yeah,
noise,
yeah.
So that's only as large effect as losing the 3D information. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the projection may be loose. That's my intuition.
Just, so you mentioned that as you went to 4-point higher statistics, it was too hard to do in
yeah.
practice. In principle, does it? Would there? Is there more and more constraining power there? Is there expected to be more and more constraining power there, or does it sort of asymptote to? I'm asked because you know, you found this. You later on found this other summary statistic of
yeah.
the peaks, and it gave
yeah
30-40% improvement or whatever over the power spectrum. Is it possible that there are other summary statistics out there that give even much more dramatic improvements over the power spectrum?
So
I just don't know how to find them, or
people have been looking at many, many different summary statistics. The other ones I haven't talked about. Matt and I worked on 1-point PDF. It gives really similar constraining power as peak counts, a slightly worse, yeah, pretty good. And also you can look at, for example, Minkowski functionals. It's like the parameter is funny, of the some thresholded field, but then it's more complicated, so I didn't present that. So they do find more constraining power than the ones I present. And then from comparisons, say the peak counts and the bispectrum, that you see improvement from peak counts on top of bispectrum, that means you probably have more information in the higher order statistic, but then we really don't know if it's fourth order, fifth order, because it's non-Gaussian, so it doesn't. But then maybe the ultimate question is how much information are there in total? Like we're missing.
So that question is related to like the maximum k you go to as well, right? So the relative improvement is larger the higher k you go to.
That's right. Yeah.
The DDI really go to very high k, for example.
Yes.
But I guess if you did go to higher k, you could model the higher, smaller scales better. The relative improvement would be a lot larger, right? So that's in the
yeah.
You showed in the beginning, there's lots of information in small scales. That
yes.
Using.
That's right. So so there's also this ultimate question: how much information? People do machine learning, which I'm not part of, is that you can improve the constraint by something like factor of four, but then you really don't know which order of like you're getting the information from. So there is room to improve even beyond what I talked about here. Yes. But I think the current issue is not how much more information you can get, but rather what is the systematic related to them, because we understand systematics for power spectrum relatively well, but then for this higher order statistic, it's not well tested. So implementation is more of the issue right now.
So if down to a squeezed limit of the bispectrum,
yeah.
I'm wondering, have you thought about whether consistency relation might be a good thing to differentiate and see the neutrino you get there?
Yeah, I haven't tested. Yeah, Lam Hui. Suggest that, yeah. That's right. Thank you.